The pursuit drove them on relentlessly into wild country where not even Buckhut had ventured before. Twice they saw game, once a herd of four eland crossing the skyline, then 50 beautiful blue buck in a single herd together. But if they had turned aside to pursue the animals, they would have lost ground, and the gunfire would have brought Caser and his troops on at a full tilt. He would be with them before they could butcher their kill. If they shot one of the mules, the same thing would happen. They rode on with the last of their provisions almost gone. Jim hoarded the last handful of coffee beans. Gradually, the pace Zama could maintain with Louisa and the mules fell off. The gap between the two parties dwindled until Jim and Buckhut caught up with them. Still, Caser's troops came on apace, so that Jim's little band had more and more difficulty holding them off. Fresh horse steaks grilled over the fire seemed to have restored the strength and determination of Caser's troopers. Louisa was flagging. She had been emaciated before the chase began, and now, with little food and rest, she was nearing the limit of her endurance. To add to Jim's worries, other hunters had joined the chase. Sleeping fitfully in the darkness, cold and hungry, unable to afford time during daylight even to collect firewood, expecting at any moment that Caser's men might creep up on them, they were startled awake by a terrible sound. Louisa screamed before she could stop herself. "What is that?" Jim leapt out of his fur kaross and went to her. He put an arm around her shoulders. She was so terrified that she did not pull away. The sound came again, a series of deep grunts, each louder than the last, crescendoing into a thunder that echoed and rolled off the dark mountains. "What is it?" Louisa's voice shook. "Lions," Jim told her. There was no point in trying to deceive her, so instead he tried to distract her. Even the bravest of men is frightened by a lion three times, when first he sees its spoor, when first he hears its roar, when first he meets it face to face. "Once is enough for me," she said, and although her voice quavered, she gave a small, uncertain laugh. Jim felt a lift of pride at her courage. Then he dropped his arm from her shoulders, and he felt her shift uncomfortably in his embrace. She still could not bear a masculine touch. "They are after the horses," he told her. "If fortune favours us, they might go after Caser's animals instead of ours." As if in answer to his wish, a few minutes later they heard a fusillade of musket fire further back down the valley, where they had seen the enemy set up camp at nightfall. "The lions must be on our side," Louisa laughed again, a little more convincingly. At intervals during the rest of the night there came the clap of a distant musket shot. "The lions are still harassing Caser's camp," Jim said. "With luck they will lose some horses." At dawn they began their flight again. Jim looked back through the telescope and saw that Caser had lost none of his horses. "They were able to drive off the lions, more's the pity," he told Louisa. "Let's hope they try again tonight," she said. It was the hardest day they had so far been forced to endure. During the afternoon, a thunderstorm swept down from the northwest and drenched them with cold, driving rain. It blew over just as the sun was setting, and in the last light of the day they saw the enemy less than a league behind them, coming on steadily. Jim continued the retreat long after dark. It was a nightmare march over wet and treacherous ground, through rills that had swollen dangerously with rain. Jim knew in his heart that they could not carry on like this much longer. When at last they halted, Louisa almost fell from Trueheart's back. Jim wrapped her in a sodden fur kaross and gave her a small stick of chugga, almost the last of their food. "You have it. I'm not hungry," she protested. "Eat it," he commanded. "No time for heroics now." She slumped and fell asleep before she had taken more than a few mouthfuls. Jim went to where Zama and Buckhut were sitting together. "This is just about the end," he said grimly. "We have to do it tonight, or not at all. We have to get at their horses." They had been planning all that day, but it would be a forlorn attempt. Although he kept a bold face, Jim knew it was almost certainly doomed. Buckhut was the only one of them who had any chance at all of thwarting Gear's vigilance and getting into the enemy camp undiscovered, and he could not untether all 18 horses and bring them out on his own. "One or two, yes," he told Jim, "but not 18. "We must take all of them." He looked up at the sky. A sickle moon sailed through the streaming remnants of the rain clouds. Just enough light to do the job. "Buckhut could get into the horse lines and cripple them, hamstring them," Zama suggested. Jim shifted uneasily. The idea of mutilating a horse was distasteful. The first animal would scream so loudly Buckhut would have the whole camp down on him. No, that won't work. At that moment, Buckhut sprang to his feet and sniffed loudly. "Hold the horses," he cried. "Quickly, their lions are here." Zama ran to Trueheart and seized her halter rope. Buckhut darted to the mules to control them. They'd be more docile than the two thoroughbreds. Jim was only just in time. He grabbed Drumfire's head as the stallion reared on his hind legs and whinnied shrilly with terror. Jim was lifted off his feet, but he managed to throw an arm around Drumfire's neck and hold him down. "Hey, steady, my darling. Whoa! Whoa! Now, easy, easy," he soothed him. But still the horse stamped and reared and tried to break away. Jim shouted across at Buckhut, "What is it? What's happening?"
"It's the lion," Buckhut panted.
"Foul demon. He has circled upwind and squirted his stinking piss for the horses to smell. The lioness will be waiting downwind to catch any that break away."
"Sweet Christ," Jim exclaimed, "even I can smell it."
It was a rank feline stench in the back of his throat, more repulsive than the spray of a tomcat. Drumfire reared again. The odour was driving him crazy. He was beyond control. This time Jim knew he could not hold him. He still had both arms around the stallion's neck, but his feet barely touched the ground. Drumfire broke into a gallop, dragging Jim along with him.
"The lioness!" Buckhut yelled. "Beware! The lioness is waiting for you!"
Drumfire's hooves thundered over the rocky ground, and Jim felt as though his arms were being wrenched out of their sockets.
"Let him go, Samoya! You cannot stop him!" Buckhut screamed after him. "The lioness will get you, too!"
Jim jackknifed his body forward, and as his feet struck the earth, he used the power of both legs to boost himself high and swing one leg over Drumfire's back. Balancing easily to the stallion's run, he snatched Kaiser's pistol from his belt and cocked the hammer with a single movement.
"To your right, Samoya!"
Buckhut's voice receded behind him. But he picked up the warning just in time. He saw the movement as the lioness broke from cover and streaked in from his right. She was ghostly pale in the faint moonlight, silent, huge and terrible. He lifted the pistol and leaned forward. He tried to steer Drumfire with the pressure of his knees, but the horse was far beyond any restraint. He saw the lioness get ahead of them and crouch down, gathering herself to spring. Then she rose from the earth, launching herself straight at Jim. There was no time to aim. Instinctively, he pointed the muzzle into her face. She was so close that he could see both her front paws reaching for him with great curved claws. Her open jaws were a black pit. Her teeth shone like porcelain in the moonlight, and the graveyard stench of her breath blew hot in his face as she roared. He fired the pistol at the full reach of his right arm, and the muzzle flashed blinded him. The weight of the lioness's body crashed into them. Even Drumfire reeled at the weight, but then he gathered himself and galloped on. Jim felt the lioness's claws rip into his boot, but they did not hold. The huge carcass dropped away, tumbled slackly across the hard ground, then lay in an inert pile. It took seconds for Jim to realize that he had come through the attack unscathed. Then his next care was for Drumfire. He leaned forward and clasped him around the neck, calling to him soothingly.
"It's all over, my sweetheart. Whoa! Hey-o! There's a good boy."
Drumfire's ears twitched back as he listened to Jim's voice. He slowed down to an easy trot and at last to a walk. Jim steered him back up the slope, but as soon as he smelt the lioness's blood, he started mincing and dancing, throwing his head nervously.
"Lioness is dead," Buckhut called out of the darkness, "shot through the mouth and out of the back of her skull." "Where's the lion?" Jim shouted back. As if in reply, they heard the lion roar near the top of the mountain, a good mile off. "Now she is no further use to him. He has deserted his wife," Bakat sneered. "Cowardly and thieving beast." It was with difficulty that Jim coaxed Drumfire back to where Bakat stood beside the dead lioness. He was still skittish and nervous. "I've never seen him so terrified," Jim exclaimed. "No animal can stay calm and brave with the smell of a lion's piss or blood in his nostrils," Bakat told him. Then they exclaimed in the same voice, "That's it! We have it!" It was long after midnight by the time they reached the ridge overlooking the enemy camp. Kayser's watchfires had burned low, but they could see that the sentries were still awake. "Just a small breeze from the east," Jim held Drumfire's head to calm him. The stallion was still shivering and sweating with terror. Not even Jim's hand and voice could soothe him. Every time the carcass he was towing behind him slithered forward, he rolled his eyes until the whites glared in the moonlight. "We must keep below the wind," Bakat murmured. "The other horses must not catch the scent until we are ready." They had muffled Drumfire's hooves with leather booties and wrapped all the metal pieces of his tack. Bakat went ahead to make sure that the way was clear as they circled out round the western perimeter of the enemy camp. "Even Thea has to sleep sometime," Jim whispered to Bakat, but he was unconvinced. They closed in slowly and were within half a pistol shot of the perimeter where they could see the enemy sentries outlined against the faint glow of their fire. "Give me your knife, Somoya," whispered Bakat. "It is sharper than mine." "If you lose it, I will have both your ears in exchange," Jim muttered as he handed it over. "Wait for my signal." Bakat left him, in his disconcertingly abrupt fashion, seeming to vanish into the air. Jim stood at Drumfire's head, holding his nostrils closed to prevent him wickering at the smell of the other horses so close to him.